Welcome to the Wellness Within podcast. We are a nonprofit wellness center for patients, survivors, caregivers, and families affected by the trauma of cancer. We provide a wide range of services that enhance an individual's ability to experience quality of life. And we believe that everyone should have access to our programs and conversations, which are offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied the support they need. If you find inspiration in what we share, we invite you to consider supporting Wellness Within through a donation. Your generosity enables us to continue offering these valuable resources to our community. To make a donation and contribute to the well-being of those facing cancer, please visit our website at wellnesswithin.org or click the link in the episode description. Your support makes a difference, so thank you for being a vital part of our mission. Together, we empower whole person well-being, bridging gaps, and reconnecting to what is most meaningful.
The following program is offered freely to ensure no one is ever denied access to these practices and conversations. We would like to thank Union Pacific and the Kelly Foundation, who, in part, sponsor this podcast. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support Wellness Within offerings, you can go to our website at wellnesswithin.org. And while you're there, you can also access our Zoom class schedule and YouTube videos, as well as sign up for our newsletter to support you throughout the year.
I think it's important to find hope. And that's different to me than stay positive, be optimistic. Even in those final days, there's still hope. There's hope for more time. There's hope for more conversation. There's always room for hope.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Wellness Within podcast series. And I am very excited today to have our guest, Margot Folks, here. And we're going to just ponder, kick around, talk about the many different aspects and layers of grief. Hi, Margot. Welcome to our podcast.
Thanks, Patty. I'm so glad to be here.
I really am as well. So would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm a consultant and a writer, and I'm also the founder of something called Saltwater, which is a blog and an online community for people who've lost someone dear to them, and also for people who want to support someone they love who's grieving. I started Saltwater after my 21-year-old son died in 2014, followed by my mom, who died in 2015. And that's when I created the website.
Wow. And would you mind, we'll repeat it at the end so everybody gets it at the end of this podcast. Would you mind telling people right now how they can access your website?
Sure. You can find Saltwater at findyourharbor.com.
Those of you who are listening to this, I want to highly recommend that you take a look at it. It's beautiful. It's very well done.
Thank you.
And it's a very difficult topic for most of us. So I really appreciate all those, the resources that are available, because there's not always a lot.
Yeah, I think that I found that as well. And I also found, for whatever reason, there were a lot of grief and loss websites where they were difficult to navigate. And you just touched on this a bit, but one of the things that was important to me with Saltwater was that when people landed on the website, I wanted them to be able to let their breath out and to feel like, okay, I can find what I need very easily. And there are no pop-up windows, there's no solicitation, there's no ads. So it's very easy for people to find the resources or the blog posts that they are looking for.
Wow. As soon as you were saying that, I can feel my shoulders go down, because I do recognize that there are those interferences, you know, for us being able to land safely in a home of when we're really experiencing the depths of our grief. It's nice. Okay, so grief and loss are everywhere right now. Yeah, it's interesting that people are still struggling more than ever before. Why do you think that's the case, Margot?
So I think the biggest reason is the probably the most obvious one, which is the pandemic and all the deaths that we've had from COVID. And coupled with that, of course, you have the people who've had COVID and recovered from it somewhat, but may still be struggling with terrible side effects or impacts from the disease. And at the same time, then you have all these impacts that have happened as a result of COVID, right? So you have people who've lost jobs, you've had people who've been evicted. We're all isolated for the most part, right? So we're not just unable to see perhaps our children or our grandchildren or other relatives, but we're not in workplaces. So we're not interacting with sort of our second family, you know, our friends at work, our coworkers. I think that's had a huge impact on people. The other thing too with being isolated is that it takes more effort to connect with people. So if you're someone who was actively grieving before COVID started, or you had a loss during the pandemic and the shutdown that we're in, you have to work much harder to find support because you can't just go to the local hospital or the local church and go to a grief support group. You've got to go get on the web and go find that. And it's tough to show up if you don't know people before that grief support group starts, because everybody's on Zoom and you don't get to know each other in the same way. On top of that, as you know from the work you do, people are still getting diagnosed with cancer, but they have to worry about getting COVID. They have to worry about going to an appointment and not being able to take a partner, for example, with them to take notes, or going into the hospital for treatment and not being able to have visitors, which is just devastating when you're already terrified by something like that.
Yes, we've had quite a few people over this last year where their spouse had to go in the hospital for treatment. Something had happened and then they had to go in for testing and they kept him in the hospital and they couldn't see him.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, our son passed away from cancer. So we spent 8 years, you know, in and out of treatment rooms and hospitals and doctor's appointments. And one of the promises we made to him early on, my husband and I, was you will never be alone. At a minimum, one of us will be with you. And as often as possible, we'll both be there. Mm. And I just can't imagine, as, you know, particularly as he got to be 18, 19, 20, you know, in the notion that he would ever have had to go alone to a doctor's appointment or to be hospitalized where we couldn't get to him is just horrifying to me. Oh, and yet I know that's what a lot of folks are dealing with right now. And one of the things that I've said for a long time in my consulting world is that so much of what happens to us does involve loss, right? When you think about layoffs, for example, or even just someone, an individual losing a job, that's a loss that needs to be grieved before you can move forward. And so part of the other pain that's going on right now in the pandemic is that the folks who've had losses that are not deaths, I think oftentimes feel like they're seen as less important, you know, with the response being, well, but nobody died. But that doesn't make the pain any less.
Yeah, I think it is. And I'm really glad to hear you say, you know, there's a lot of people that have been getting diagnosed during the pandemic. And oh my gosh. And I personally have, you know, experienced people having anger. It makes it hard for people to trust their community if they're not wearing a mask because they can't spend the extra money to have their groceries delivered. It's also, I had someone say to me a few weeks back, I feel like I'm grieving what I thought, the community I thought I lived in would be more compassionate.
Yeah, that must be terribly painful because I think so many of us are experiencing that where we've discovered differences we didn't know were there. But it's easier to manage that in a way if you don't need that community in the same way, you know, where you are battling a significant illness and you need their support and their attention and their care. And then you feel this concern that perhaps it's not safe to be around them because they're not wearing a mask.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm struck by the last point you made earlier about people feeling reluctant to share their losses with others. Why do you think they hold back?
So what I learned is that grief, it turns out, is very hierarchical. And what I mean by that is, so when I lost my son, no one questioned that loss. People just don't say things to try to take your sadness away. Mm-hmm. But when my mother died, a lot of people said to me with very good intention, oh, but she had a long, full life. Mm-hmm. As if somehow because she was 92, that the pain of her not being here should be less. And right. And the reality for me was that she was one of my most important people. So her death was just devastating for me, particularly coming a year after Jimmy died. Mm. And it was my first realization that people do think in rankings or hierarchies when it comes to grief. Mm-hmm. But then what happens too, as you go out from there, is then death trumps, you know, losing your house or losing your job or having other things happen. And so I think what happens is people start to just feel like they can't share certain pain.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We're all suffering in so many ways right now. There is less bandwidth, if you will, for people to support right. other people. But I also think that like anything else, there are ebbs and flows. So there are some days, you know, where mm-hmm. my pain over my son might be really bad and I might not have a lot of bandwidth to support someone else who's grieving, no matter what they're grieving. But there are plenty of days when I can listen and support somebody else.
Right.
And then I also think because our losses are different, I might be able to sit with someone's loss because it doesn't trigger anything in me, for example, and have a lot of space for that. Mm. But the key is, I think, to that really what I've learned is that when we go into someone's sadness, that we just have to honor it, that all grief matters, all sadness is real. And where I think we get ourselves into trouble is when we start judging it or ranking it or comparing it.
Right.
And I think right. we just need to let people own it and have it and have it acknowledged and really not worry about what we think about it, mm-hmm. but just offer some support and acknowledgement. And I think that's what really makes the difference. Unfortunately, because of the situation we're in, I think there's a little more onus on people who are grieving to reach out. And I think it's up to all of us to just be honest about what we have the capacity to handle and what we don't. Because I don't think anyone should feel like they have to support another person when they're already struggling. But I think that the onus is on us to not say yes when we really can't handle it, because the chances right. are good that we're going to get impatient or we're going to reveal some sense of judgment or something, which right. is only going to do more harm. So yeah. I think we have to honor our own boundaries, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I'm wondering if, well, actually, you know, I think I'm going to ask you a question this way. Are there differences in what you're seeing from your perspective on how people are grieving when they come to your beautiful place to land and be safe to express their grief and connect with others? Are you seeing any differences now than prior to COVID?
I would say the biggest difference I would see is a heightened level of emotion. And that could be sadness. That could be anger or rage or resentment. And I think there's also people are quicker to get emotional because I think we're all just so vulnerable right now. And so we're more fragile. That's what I see. And so the pain of an existing loss is worsened because of that. And as you and I touched on earlier too, I think part of what the pandemic and the isolation has revealed is if we have relationships that have some fractures in them, those get heightened and have gotten heightened during this time. And so there's also the discovery that somebody who was perhaps looked quite supportive before the pandemic hit may have turned out not to be. And I don't mean in a sort of betrayal kind of right. way, you know, where they yeah. actually did something to harm the relationship, but where they too are struggling perhaps. And you discover, oh, I'm not actually the priority I thought I was, because when now there's people have to make choices about who they have time for and how much energy they have to be on Zoom or to reach out. I didn't make the top 10 or the top 20 list. that can be really painful.
Yeah, that's such a good point. So what advice do you have for those who are listening that want to support a friend or a family member who's grieving right now?
So I think the first thing and the most important thing is to acknowledge the loss if you haven't already done it. And I'm a big believer in handwriting and personal notes when it comes to this. And I will tell you that when my dad died, when my mom died, when Jimmy died, I have every one of those cards saved.
Oh, wow.
Because there's a real beauty to be able to pull out that bag of the cards and be able to look at them and hold them in your hands and read what people took the time to write. So I'd really encourage anybody listening to send a note, a personal note in their own handwriting. So that's the first thing, acknowledge the loss. Second, offer to spend some time with that person. You can comply with the COVID restrictions, maybe go for a walk, get a cup of coffee, mask on, socially distant, all that. Mm-hmm. And just listen. Because particularly in those early days of grief, I know I said all kinds of things, depending on whether I was just sad or whether I was mad or whether I was full of resentment. And I needed people who would just make some space and listen without any judgment. So I think that's really important. Third, I think it's important to offer very specific help. Because one of the classic mistakes people make is to say, oh, Patty, I'm so sorry that your family member has died. I am here whenever you need me. Just give me a call when you need anything. And you know that you're not going to call me because you'll think of it at midnight and you'll think, well, I can't call her then. Or you'll think of something and think, oh, she probably doesn't want to go pick up toilet paper for me at Costco. And so the person won't call. So the best thing to do is be very specific. I'd like to bring you dinner. Would Tuesday night be good? Could I drop it off then? And I'll bring you a casserole or a pan of enchiladas so that you can freeze it and don't have to eat it right away if you don't want to. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to Trader Joe's and I was going to pick up some milk and some ground coffee and something else for you. Are there other things you need? So that way the person can still say no if what you're offering isn't helpful, but you're demonstrating that you're actually willing to do something very specific. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, I think the person will say, yes, that would be great. You know, we're completely out of fresh fruit. Could you get me some fresh fruit while you're there? And then the final thing I would say is it's important to stay in touch because it's a funny thing about being home right now. We all have more time because we're not commuting anywhere. And yet the days seem to just blur together and go by. And so time passes in some ways more slowly and in some ways more quickly. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy to kind of have time go by and realize you haven't checked in on that loved one who's grieving for 3-4 weeks, a couple of months. And so a little reminder in your calendar to just check in periodically and see how they're doing.
Do you have any recollection of something happening to a friend or somebody close and you were just in the throes of your own heaviness, how hard it might have been for you to reach out to that other person?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, the best example of that was that Jimmy died in February of 2014. Mm. And then my mom developed a significant health issue coming back from his celebration of life in April. And so I look back on that year after he died where I was struggling to be there for her. And I was physically in the sense that when she went into the hospital, I would go down and I would stay with her. We were in touch. It wasn't that I wasn't showing up, but emotionally, you know, and in a, like you said, in bandwidth, I didn't have the same bandwidth that I would have had I not just lost Jimmy. So I think that's very real. It's very hard as a grieving person to muster the energy to reach out to other people or mm-hmm. to ask what you need or to support somebody else if they have a loss during that time.
Yeah. What kind of advice would you give to someone when they want to desperately reach out to someone they care about, but they're just so exhausted with their own grief?
I think it's about being honest and reaching out you know, maybe over an email or a text, which to me is the it takes the least amount of energy relative to picking up the phone.
Yeah.
Or even writing a card might be hard during that time. Yeah. And just say very simply, you know, I'm thinking about you, Patty, and I'm so sorry that you've had this loss. And I'm pretty overwhelmed with my own loss, but I do want you to know that I'm thinking about you.
Have you had to? I mean, when losing your son, losing your mom, did you find yourself, do you remember instances where you were wanting to reach out, but it was really hard?
Yes. Yes. And that's why I think it's nice to do it a little bit more removed, because I can remember at times in those early days getting on the phone with someone who wanted to talk to me about a loss they'd had, even as I was starting Saltwater. And a couple of the folks that connected early, you know, would say, let's get on the phone. And I would try really hard to be present and supportive, but it was really triggering sometimes, depending on the nature of the loss or the story. And I learned that I had to protect myself at the same time, because I couldn't hold their pain and mine as well. That's the thing.
Yeah, that is very, very difficult to do. Mm-hmm. Could you say that?
No. And I didn't. But what I learned to do was to defer, say, taking a phone call and try to keep the support and the connection over email, for example, or over text. And I also learned, you know, what you can do is be a resource, so that if I didn't have the bandwidth, I knew people who were farther along the path than I was in terms of the distance between, say, when they'd lost their child and present day. So I could connect them.
Do you have any memory or examples that you could share personally, a time when you felt really exposed, really vulnerable, but someone saw you and what that experience was like?
I do. Actually, the one that comes to mind is when my daughter was playing softball in college and we were traveling with the team, you know, to watch her play, that I was sitting with another mom that I didn't know that well. And we were talking in the airport, and Molly had put in her bio on the team website about her brother. So people on the parents on the team, for example, knew that she'd lost her brother, but really virtually no one had brought it up during that season. And I was sitting with this mom named Carrie, who I liked a lot, but didn't know that well. And out of the blue, she said, you know, I'd really like to know about Jimmy, but I don't know if it's okay to ask, but I'd love to hear what he was like and what he loved to do and what made him laugh. And I just fell apart. It was the most beautiful gesture, but it went just like you're describing. It went right to the rawness of losing him, because most people will ask, oh, well, what did he die of? And right. That keeps me in the place of cancer and, you know, all the horrible things that happen that you're dealing with when someone is dying. And it was such a beautiful question, but it just made me completely vulnerable. And so the, you know, immediate, her reaction is like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. And I said, no, this, you cannot even imagine what a gift you've given me, but I have to compose myself first and then I'll answer your question. But it's moments like that that have really taught me that what matters is that we just sit with each other's pain and sadness.
Yeah.
You know, and we, like I said, we hold it, we make space for it. And I think it's Megan Devine who talks a lot about, you know, don't fix anything. Don't try to fix anything. You don't have the power to fix anybody else's loss. So just listen, just sit with it.
My heart just feels like it's just expanding so much sitting here listening to you. That's, I really appreciate your words. Well, in closing, I really want to close just on that, but I have to, mostly because, you know, what we do is we work with people dealing with cancer. And so I wonder if you have any advice for those who are dealing with cancer right now, whether newly diagnosed or you know, been in treatment or even just finished treatment.
Yeah, there's a couple things that come up for me on that. I think one is, and this kind of fits with what we were talking about in general about the pandemic and all the losses people are feeling, is that I think we're very quick in this culture to go right to language of survivor and fighter language. And we used a lot of that with Jimmy. It resonated for him. So it's I'm not criticizing it. But I think sometimes what goes along with that is a message of telling the person who's a cancer survivor, who's in treatment, don't stop and acknowledge or grieve for everything you've lost. So there are all these different things that affect our relationships, our finances, our health, our faith in the world. And I think it's okay to take inventory of those. And I remember doing that with Jimmy sometimes late at night, kind of making lists of things that had been lost. It just helped me to say, yeah, this has been hard and painful, even in the days long before we had any thought that he wouldn't survive it. I think it's good to recognize that. Second, one of the things Jimmy taught me was to let go of the things you can't control. So I remember feeling it in my bones with 2 or 3 weeks before every scan, just that fear of, oh my God, what is going to be on the scan? Is his cancer going to have come back? Is it going to have progressed, et cetera? And he and I were on a long walk one time and I asked him about that. You know, do you worry about your scans before you have them? And he said, no. He said, I have the scan. And then in between getting out of the MRI and meeting with Dr. Nicholson, he said, then I worry about it. And then we meet with Dr. Nicholson. And if the scan is bad, then I know that you and he will make a plan and figure out what we're going to do. And if the scan is good, I don't think about it again for 90 days. And I thought, wow, I'm not sure I can do that, but it's a pretty darn good piece of advice, you know, because he said to me, I can't control it. I, there's nothing I can do to change what's happening with my brain cancer. So he said, I'm just not going to worry about it until it happens. He was really an amazing kid, a lot of wisdom. And also so was Dr. Nicholson, his doctor, because that's the third thing I wanted to share, which really comes from him, is that I think it's important to find hope. And that's different to me than stay positive, be optimistic.
Right.
Hope to me can be really granular. So, you know, of course you want to live. You hope that you will survive this cancer. Mm-hmm. But if your diagnosis is less favorable, then there's hope for better days ahead. There's hope that you won't feel lousy after this treatment. There's hope that after you get through the treatment, that you will then be able to run again or to go back to dancing or, you know, whatever you love to do. And even I discovered, even in those final days, there's still hope. There's hope for more time. There's hope for more conversation. You know, I remember Stacy Nicholson, Jimmy's doctor, saying to me after his father died, he said, you know, he said, my father was living until he drew his last breath. And I thought, yeah, and until that person does, there's always room for hope.
I'm just trying to leave space with that last comment. That was a gift. Thank you so much, Margo.
Oh, thank you, Patty. It's been a joy to talk to you.
It's been wonderful, really wonderful. And do you mind reminding people where they can go to get their support for their grief that they may be dealing with right now?
Absolutely. They can find me and Saltwater at findyourharbor.com.
Thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to a very important topic. And I am absolutely going to have Margo back. And we'll do some more because I feel like we really just scratched the surface. Thank you again. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we'll see you again down the road. Take care.